Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me today is writer-director Justin Lee, who has brought to me my second favorite genre of film, the Western. And it was such a surprise. I'm like, wait, this is a straight Western? Honestly? Truly? And the title of it being Apache Junction also amused me, because a long time ago, I used to live in Mesa, Arizona, which is right next to Apache Junction.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
So, hi, Justin. Thank you for this early Christmas gift.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
So, I have to ask, what in the world in the pandemic-laden 2020 and 2021 caused you to say, you know, I'm going to make a Western?
Actually, it's like my fourth or fifth Western. I'm a huge fan of the genre. My grandpa got me into it when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And when I became a filmmaker, it's just, I moved to L.A. and branched out to do my first feature film. And miraculously got to meet with a very large executive producer who'd done a very big Western. And he took the time out of his day to meet me. We had lunch. And very specifically, the two things he told me. One, you can't make a micro-budget indie Western. In fact, you can't make a Western for under $10 million. It's impossible. And two, women in Westerns do not spell, so don't even bother. Those are the two things he told me. And I literally took both of those and wore those like badges of honor. And I said, well, I'm just going to go out there and say, screw you, and do it differently.
Oh my goodness.
And I think I've kind of done that. My first Western, which was Any Bullet Will Do, I did on barely any money. I charged into the dead of winter in Montana, into a real ghost town in Nevada City. And I had a female co-lead and shot a movie for barely anything. And it's what kind of got me started down doing a lot of Westerns, because everyone kept coming to me for Westerns. And here we are at Apache Junction, and I got to have a larger cast than I've kind of had before, and it was great. It was really, really great.
I'm imagining you sitting at that meeting and the devil on your shoulder saying, challenge accepted.
Yes, that was certainly, having to sit in those kinds of meetings and hear that and kind of grit your teeth is, for someone like me who's very confrontational, it was a hard thing to do. So, you know, it was more about just shut up and prove it than anything else.
Well, this film is about it's both a hero arc and a redemption arc. Your main character is a female reporter from the big city looking for a story. And she literally falls into the middle of one. You have the outlaw who comes to her aid, her rescue, and the end of that journey sort of puts you in mind of, okay, this is where turning outlaws into legends and heroes started, to sort of mythologize the Old West. And I'm like, I did not see that coming, but I approve.
I think that's kind of how it started when you started. I mean, even 12, 15 years prior to that, from at least when Apache takes place, it was kind of happening with, you know, we mentioned when he's talking to Oswald Pike, dime novels. You know, dime novels started being created about certain people and their exploits, and they got, like you're saying, they got turned into kind of legends. And then you went through the late 1800s and the 1900s, where these guys were having, you know, full stories written about them. They weren't dime novels. They were like full books and different accounts and all this stuff. And the next thing you know, you got these, you know, here we are today. And mm-hmm. I mean, I just shot another Western this summer, actually. And
nice.
And one of the characters in it says, you're one quick draw away from being a lawman or an outlaw, which is so true. Mm. Because most of these guys that wore a badge were outlaws at some point, and most outlaws who were outlaws ended up becoming lawmen at some point. It's really interesting. And that time frame in our country is fascinating. It really is. There's just so many stories.
Mm-hmm. If you look at it, the pulp novels, the dime novels, were the original tabloid journalism, full of tall tales, yes, and embellished exploits. And there's no way to fact check that stuff because the novels come out and they're all over the place before the person who's the subject of the dime novel even knows what's happened.
Yeah, I mean it's really crazy. I mean, from Billy the Kid to Wyatt Earp to, I mean, there's just so many, you know, Bass Reeves. I mean, there's so many, and you can still pinpoint in their lives really horrible things those guys did and then really heroic things that each one of those guys did. And you kind of, it's just an interesting, it's just fascinating to me. It's why I love making Westerns, is because of that reason.
So what type of, story do you enjoy telling within the Western milieu, the anti-hero, the hero, the complex loner, the complex family who doesn't have an honest chance at getting past the stories about them that have preceded them?
I love telling redemption stories. It's my favorite. Just because there's so many different arcs in a redemption story that you can have. There's so many different, you know, someone who's done those dastardly things or done something where they did something very wrong and they go to a place where they can redeem themselves. I mean, everyone loves a comeback, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that, to me, those are the most fun things to write, the most interesting things to write. And that's probably why so many of my stories kind of have those qualities to them. Redemption and then second to that would be revenge. Everyone wants a good revenge story. So it's also, I love paying tribute and homage to things that came before. And that's, you know, the 70s were a golden age to me of Westerns. And I can't throw a rock and hit a Western I didn't like that was made in the 70s. especially with Eastwood and Lee Van Cleef. And so those things are fun. You know, Death Rides a Horse and the Dollar Trilogy, and I mean, all of those things are just great.
Yeah, the Magnificent Seven was the first Western I saw as a kid, and I have loved it ever since. It's just
a great movie.
Oh my goodness. I even, when I realized that there were such things as soundtracks, I went out and got it. I'm like,
yeah.
Wait, people put music from movies on what?
I recently started, a couple years back, started collecting records. And I was just in one of my favorite towns in the world, is Astoria, Oregon, where they shot the Goonies.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into an old antique store, and I'm going through a box of records, and I found the original, like the original The Good and the Bad and the Ugly soundtrack on record. And I couldn't believe I was staring at it. And I was so, like Ennio Morricone, it was amazing. And,
vintage vinyl.
Oh my gosh. Since then I found The Thing, which Ennio Morricone did as well. I found A Fistful of Dollars. I mean, I really started going out of my way to try to find a lot of the old, you know, he scored so many Westerns, so many iconic scores by him. And it's just like you said, like they don't make that stuff anymore. Like movies don't have scores where you immediately recognize the particular theme, where for how many years that was a pretty normal thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I miss that about cinema. I really do.
Well, since you are also writing these Westerns, are you doing research on particular years or decades of the Old West? Are you looking up particular characters to sort of work their story into the stories you're writing?
I love the 1800s, so I'm a big historian. My family was all, my Uncle Dan travels to a lot of those places. He's been to a lot, so has my grandpa, and so it made me start going and really reading all these books on history and stuff. And so I love the history of it. I don't really put a lot of real character stuff into made up characters. I've always wanted to make a story about, you know, this has a little bit, Apache Junction has a little bit of the actual Hearst stuff in there. But outside of that, I would love to make a movie that is historical, and I've contemplated a couple different ideas. I would love to make a Billy the Kid movie. And there's a couple other characters, historical characters that would be great. The Johnson County War would be amazing to do something on, but not in particularly taking historical characters and borrowing from them to put into my characters. I think I've tried to create characters that are their own thing, because if I'm going to do something historically, I want to do it historically as opposed to a made up character.
Mm-hmm.
If that answers that question.
It does. It does. It does. It leads me to another question. There's an opening there, because there were a lot of cattle women involved back then, mm-hmm. because their husbands went and got themselves shot and killed doing stupid stuff like the Johnson County Wars.
Yep. Yep.
So there's a story breadcrumb for you. You never know.
I there's two women that would be, and now you're making me try to remember her name from the Johnson County War, who was at the cabin. I can't remember her name. But Annie Oakley and obviously Jane would be two phenomenal. Like, I was a gigantic fan of Deadwood.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the series was just phenomenal. And if it's one character, there's two characters I would have loved to see spinoff movies strictly. One that's obviously Swearengen and Ian McShane. But I would have loved to have seen a spinoff movie of Calamity Jane.
Yeah.
Because she was so great in that role. And I don't know if you've seen that actress do other stuff, but talk about completely different from who she is in real. I mean, who she is in other movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously Calamity Jane's whole life was so interesting. There's a lot of stories like that. You know, one of the other stories is, you know, no one realizes that, Alan Pinkerton's first Pinkerton outside of himself was a female. So there's some really interesting stories out there.
I did not know that. Cool.
Yeah.
Now that would be an interesting history to write, the beginnings of the Pinkertons.
It's
Isn't somebody working on that?
You know, I think they tackled it. I mean, there was a show called I think it was called The Pinkertons. I think it was a Canadian show. They built a small set and they shot this show. I think Angus McFadden was in it, and Martha McIsaac. And yeah, I mean, it was not a lot of people saw it, obviously. But, you know, the Pinkertons have a very, very controversial history,
mm-hmm.
which makes it all the more interesting. It started out as a good thing and for many years ended up being a very controversial, not great organization. And
yeah, some of the,
I think someone needs to just do there's too much there to do just a movie. I think that's a series that would be phenomenal. But yeah, it's a cool thing.
Yeah, that would have to be at least like a 6 or 10 episode docuseries.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cuz if I remember correctly, the Pinkertons ended up being union busters for a while there in the early 1900s, right?
Yeah, they were responsible for the big massacre out, you know, in Butte, Montana, of all the miners.
Oh, right, that one. I was thinking there was one in West Virginia.
Yeah, there was that mine too. They were massively controversial.
So you said
not just union busting, but I mean, they, you know, they were judge, jury, and executioner with a ton of criminals. So it's, like I said, controversial.
Long, long, colorful history. Now, you said you had just finished shooting another Western. Is there, can you tell us anything about that one? Like, give us a little hints before we get to actually see it.
Yeah, I just shot a movie called A Tale of Two Guns that has Casper Van Dien, Tom Berenger, Ed Marone, and Jed Nelson in it.
Nice.
So have Jeff Fahey and Danny Trejo.
How are some of these actors feeling? It's like, yeah, you guys are going to do a Western. It's been a while, but welcome.
Yes, I can tell you, I've worked with Danny twice. Danny Trejo loves Westerns. Literally loves Westerns. And when he shows up in his costume, it's just awesome. He loves it. And in this particular movie that I just shot, it's actually him, Jeff Fahey, and Casper. They're all in a scene together. And, of course, they're all, you know, they've all worked with Robert Rodriguez multiple times. So it's they were all giddy about that they got to kind of reunite, which was cool. And you know, Tom Berenger obviously is a Western staple. And so, again, it's a classic. You know, I've worked with Bruce Dern a few times, and Bruce Dern's obviously a big in that, you know, an icon in that genre too. And so that's America's staple in cinematic history is the Western. And I think everyone gets a little excited to get to go work on one.
Nice. Well, I for one am happy you are doing your part to keep the genre alive by giving us some really, really good and beautifully shot stories.
Oh, well, thank you. I love doing it, and I'll continue to do it. Hopefully I can, each time I do one, I can somehow try to find a way to bring something new to the table and tell different stories. Cause that, to me, that's what it's all about.
Awesome. Well, Justin, I would like to thank you for sharing your time and your insights on Apache Junction with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
The movie is Apache Junction, out in theaters on demand and digital from Sabin Films on September 24th. And as a fan of the Western, I highly recommend people go see it. Again, thank you, Justin.
Thank you so much, Donna.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Hi, welcome to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me now is actor Stuart Townsend, who is appearing as the gunslinger outlaw Jericho Ford in Sabin Films' new Western, hello, Apache Junction. Hi, Stuart.
How you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. I have long been a sucker for Westerns, so every time I see a new one coming out, I go, really? You have my attention. So how in the world?
You do. I'm in that camp as well.
So yeah. How did a Western come across your desk?
I had worked with the producer, Damon Hillen, about 8 years ago. We'd done like this Thai mafia gangster movie. And we'd had a blast, and he just called me up out of the blue and was like, hey, do you like Westerns? And I'm like, yes. <It's> like, you know, like that's my, that's a dream I've been harboring for decades. And he sent me the script. And to be honest, I read the log line, and I saw Jericho Ford as the character name. And I was in, I was like, I'm in, I don't even need to read the script. I want to be Jericho Ford already just by his name. And I read the script and I loved it. I just thought, this is a great old fashioned, straight up, you know, shoot 'em up Western. And that's exactly what it was. And well, with a twist that it's a female protagonist kind of going to this outlaw town to uncover the truth. So I just loved it. I read it. And then I spoke with Justin Lee, the director, who had already made a couple of Westerns, and he's a huge Western fan. He knows his stuff. And that was it. I was like, sign me up. I'm down.
Yeah, Justin seems to have an ear for a Western with a little bit more modern sensibilities, but still has that gritty, dusty feel of, you know, the old Westerns we grew up on. And I'm so far loving what he's been doing. And your portrayal as Jericho Ford was... understated, and yet, you know, you couldn't look away. Every time you're on the screen talking to either the reporter or the barkeep, everybody's waiting for Jericho to do something, and that was just so fun for me.
That was great. Yeah, they definitely build him up as this, you know, this character, and I mean, it's a great character. It's just one of those well-written stories, and he's that classic archetypal outlaw guy, But, you know, I like the way that he kind of realized that he's not all bad, or at least Scout Taylor Compton's character, she realizes this guy's he's not such a bad character after all. And but yeah, I mean, it was a super fun role to play because of what you just said. You know, it's you kind of set him up as this mysterious guy, you know.
Well, talking about the complexity of Jericho Ford, was there anything that Justin gave you, or that was in the character that you thought you should bring forward?
Well, you know, in the story, you obviously see that he's a gunslinger and he's a fighter and he's got all of those kind of male attributes of, like, you know, being this gritty gunslinger. So that's there on the page. What I liked about the story was that there's also his deep friendship with Wasco, who is a Native American Indian character. And there's a story there. They don't go too deep into the story, but it's sort of intimated that Wasco saved Jericho's life, and that he was at the bar, you know, the bottom of a bottle, and has been for most of his life. So I think for me, there was a lot of back history to kind of create in my own mind. And it's something I usually do when I work on a script. I read it a few times, and then I imagine, so where was I born? Who were my parents? What was my family like? Where did I go to? Like, I just go through an entire history. And I did that with Jericho, you know, and it's a way to, it sort of grounds me in the territory that I'm in, or the time that I'm in, which is obviously in this period, I'm in this Western time. I had always pegged Jericho as this guy who, at an early age, had some major traumas and deaths, and had to escape, and, you know, kind of found himself at a very early age fending for himself. That's kind of what I just, it, you know, that's what the story said to me and spoke to me. So I always felt like I have a soft spot for Jericho myself, you know, because, you know, he's a pretty badass character, but I think he's got a good heart. He's someone who really deeply feels friendship and doesn't have a lot of it. And so I just had a good feeling for this guy, this character.
Yeah, it came across as a very melancholy character with a past that troubles him, and the opportunity to be a bodyguard for a nosy young female reporter from the big city of San Francisco just seemed an unusual pairing, but fun.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's exactly it. You're reading the script, I was like, this is fun. This is, you know, it's a classic setup. And you're right. And we had a lot of fun making it, to be honest. It was like, the actors are so great. Scout was awesome, and she keeps it really fun. And that was one of the, like, we had a strange time because the first 10 days, we just had so much fun, and we'd go on set every day, and set was fun, and you're shooting and you're dueling and you're doing all these kind of things that are from your childhood dreams. And then COVID hit and we had to shut down, and then we had to kind of revamp back up 9 months later. And that was, it was really strange because the first couple of days were very subdued and people were pretty traumatized by the whole thing. And it was weird coming into testing and masks. But I have to say, I think the storyline and what we were doing, and then all the characters that are in the show, we, after about 3 days, we were back having a blast again with each other. It was just really good times. And I think it shows in the film.
It does.
I haven't actually seen the film, so I don't know, but I hope it does.
Well, no spoilers for anybody, not even you, but the seamlessness of the film, I would never have guessed that there was a 9 month break in shooting. Never.
Yeah. Well, I'm about 10 pounds heavier post COVID. I definitely saw it. I mean, people are watching that, but I'm like, oh, there's a double chin. Yeah. No, I mean, we tried to ramp it back up to the fun, you know, and luckily there was a couple of scenes of horse riding and bar fights that made it more fun again for everybody, you know? and kind of brought back that spirit that we lost because of COVID.
Nice. So did you do any special preparations for like horseback riding and fighting in the underbrush?
Yeah. You know, I think it was day one. They said, you know, you're going to be galloping off into the sunset. I'm like, okay, I do know how to ride a horse, but it's been years. And I don't really, you know, I'd love to gallop, but I'm going to need to do some lessons. And it was great. They're like, we have amazing horses. Get on them anytime. And I did. I mean, I really used the, I had so many horse lessons. Anytime I wasn't doing something, I was on a horse. And I had this horse Stinger, and they were just so responsive, just such, I mean, when you're on a well-trained horse, you realize how bad you are because they respond to your incorrect movements, you know? And it's really interesting because you're like, wow, okay, I did tell it to do that. And I shouldn't have, because I don't know what I'm doing. But after a few days, I kind of got it. We shot, by the time we shot the scene, I was loving galloping around the place, as you do. Actor's dream, really.
Did you get a lot of practice with vintage weapons? Because I know for a fact Thomas Jane has a couple of vintage pieces in his collection.
Right. You know, I didn't get enough time. I also had this long pistol that I tried to change, and Justin's like, nah, that's the gun. That's the gun for that character. I'm like, okay, I respect that. But you know, the one good thing was we weren't making a kind of special effects, you know, movie in a sense. Like, that's what I liked about this movie. It's pretty much stripped down back to the old Westerns where it's just two guys in the street. And so I didn't feel like there was no like quick cutaway to the gun and wow, that was super fast. It was more realistic where it might be a little slow and fumbling. And obviously I practiced my heart out. And the good thing about making a movie is you get a few takes. It's not like you're on stage and you better get it right in one. But yeah, I mean, all those things were just so much fun. Riding horses and learning how to quick draw. You know, it's really what you want to be doing as an actor, for sure.
Nice. So if in a couple of years, Justin Lee is doing another Western and he gives you a call.
Oh, I'm down. I mean, Jericho Ford did not die at the end, so you never know. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed working with Justin and Damon. They're, you know, great guys. And We have talked about it already, so well, let's see how this goes. You know?
Awesome. So, are you working on anything currently that we'll be able to see later?
Yeah, I just finished a movie in Ireland that I'm still in the hotel room on my way home back from. I just left Ireland like 2 days ago, and I did a Hallmark movie that was set in Ireland. We filmed in a bunch of castles, and we did this just gorgeous love story that's about family and healing and just sweet, sweet as, I mean, my hardened LA agent goes, hey, I got this script for you. It's really sweet. When he said that, I'm like, oh, wow, it must be really sweet. And then I read it. And I'm like, this is so sweet. I want to do this movie. And so I got to go home. I got to go back to Ireland. It's the first time in 3 years. I got to film in all these castles and I just had so much fun. And I brought my two young boys with me and we got to be hanging around in castles and just showing them all the sights and seeing all my family. So I've just had the best month ever. And that film is coming out. It's going to be called Christmas at Castle Heart. And Hallmark, man, these guys turn around fast. We just finished like 3-4 days ago. And I think the film is out on Thanksgiving. So that's in a hot minute.
Hallmark is truly the juggernaut of the Christmas movies. I think I read somewhere that they make like 20 or 25 Christmas movies a year.
And they are pro Christmas people. They like, you'd walk into a set and like 2 hours later, they would Christmas it up. And you're just like, oh my God, I feel like I want Santa Claus to come through the door right now. Like, and my kids, they're 5 and 7. And they walked, the first time they walked onto the set, they were like, Dad, is it Christmas? And they got all excited. And I'm like, oh no, it's not Christmas yet. But they are Christmas professionals. I mean, they're legit the pros of Christmas. They make everything look so beautifully Christmassy. It's, and then they had Ireland as the backdrop, so they Christmased up all these castles, and it was just, it's just wonderful.
Nice. You should have told your boys it was a rehearsal for Christmas. That would have gotten them more excited.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So other than hoping for a new Western, what is your personal, like, top of the wish list role?
I don't really know. I've never been somebody who kind of, like, I always wanted to do a Western, to be honest, but that was one of the few things that, like, I could tell you, like, this is the character and this is the genre. But as an actor, I've always just relished doing different stuff. Like, someone would give me a comedy and I'm like, great, I'm going to do a comedy. And then suddenly the next minute later, I'm playing a serial killer. I'm like, great, I'm playing a serial killer. You know, that's the whole point of being an actor to me, is trying to play as many diverse roles as possible. But I've never had, like, the wish list in my head. I've even, like, sat down and gone, okay, what would I like to do? But I never had it. And yet in my career, I've actually got to play a lot of different genres and characters. So it's been, yeah, it's been great. And playing a Western was, it was awesome. I mean, there's really nothing like doing a duel out on some, you know, outside a saloon in the high heat of Santa Fe, New Mexico. That's definitely a highlight.
Awesome. Well, the movie is Apache Junction, out from Saban Films on September 24th. Stuart, thank you so, so much for your time today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ashmore from Sci-Fi's Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
And once again, the movie is Apache Junction, where outlaws rule. Available, actually, now from Saban Films in theaters, on demand, and on digital. And if you're a fan of Westerns, you'll like this one. This is a fun one. Just enough drama, just enough angst, and just enough gunfights. I am curious to see what writer-director Justin Lee comes up with next. He seems to be on a roll of doing Westerns. So maybe his next Western will come along in a little while and we'll have some fun with that one too. How about you? Are you a fan of the Western? It's a soft spot of mine. Westerns, monster movies, giant robots, space opera, all the fun stuff. So let me know what stories, what genres are in your forever favorites lists. Send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can also leave those comments on the website, sliceofscifi.com, and hit me up on Twitter, @sliceofscifi. Start a conversation, and we'll have a little bit of fun. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please consider leaving us a review. All those reviews and feedback on this show help raise our profile, get the show in front of other ears. And you can do the same thing over at Podchaser. Leave us a review there. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support Slice of Sci-Fi and all of the podcasts and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe, including Writers After Dark and Babylon Podcast. Your pledges through Patreon, your support through Ko-fi, your donations through PayPal, all of that helps keep all of these websites online. So I thank all of you who are currently helping to support efforts here. And if you are interested in adding your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Pick a tier, any tier, and you will be eligible for perks. Every month I pick a winning email address out of the hat, and that person gets to choose from a book, a DVD, a Blu-ray, or a 4K set. You can also support through Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/sliceofscifi. Add a donation over there or directly through PayPal, paypal.me/scifisummer. Either way you choose to support, either through a monthly pledge or through a donation every now and then, your generosity, your support is truly greatly appreciated. And for that, I thank you. Well, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.